We're holding on page 36 in Eruvin, Oslamadalin. The Gemara starts the sugya by talking about a particular din as far as the halachas of Eruvin, and Reb Nachman says on it, Kamamalya Halshmaisa, how wonderful, how great this statement is. So now, then having mentioned that, the Gemara mentions another statement in halacha where Reb Nachman did not like it. And that's where we come in over here in Ein Yaakov. Amar of Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Kol Ashosi Revius Yayin Al Yoda. A person who drank a revius of wine should not teach halacha. And here it means, you know, we had previously about a Talmud teaching, about a Talmud passing halacha in front of his Rebbe, where there you have, at least according to Tosfos, the very basic halacha that everybody knows he would be allowed to, but here not even that. There is actually a different girsa that Tosfos discusses it at some length, that al yoda or al yode may actually mean he shouldn't daven. The Gemara is going to take up that point later about that you're not allowed to, that person's not allowed to daven after he drank wine. But here, so here, either we're talking about that or we're talking about teaching Torah. However, Amar Reb Nachman, lav mal yohai shmaita. However, Reb Nachman says this teaching is not a very good one. Dehan no. Because I, Reb Nachman, until I drink a revius of wine, my mind is not so clear. So Abba, drinking a revius of wine helps my mind be clear. So how can you make a blanket statement that anybody who drank a revius of wine is automatically, they can't teach or decide halacha? Now, Marsha points out there is a different Gemara in Masechta Yoma where Rava says on himself, that wine and good fragrances opened up my mind. The Alter Rebbe brings it Perek Zayin of Tanya as an example where a person uses gashmiastic pleasures in order to enhance his avod. However, Marsha says, there you're talking about, we've learned before, that Rava used to mix his wine with a lot of water, so therefore that's different. There was so much water in there that therefore, it can have a good effect on it. Here apparently we're talking about the wine, about a revius of wine neat. So then in that case, so Rabbi Yehuda is saying that's no good. You can't teach halacha after that, but Rabbi Nachman is saying just the opposite. I drink that and it makes my mind clear. However, Omalei Rava, but Rava, who was a Talmud of Reb Nachman, says, "My time, Omer Mar Hochi, Rebbe, why are you talking like that? Why are you saying the expression Kama Malya Hoshmaita and then Loy Malya Hoshma Lav Malya Pai Shmaita, saying this one is good and this one is not?" What does it mean? A pasuk in Mishlei, the roya zonus ya'abed hoin, a person who patronizes zonus will lose a fortune. So in the simple sense, it means exactly what it sounds like. A person can spend a lot of money on that. However, here the Gemara is darshaning for Rashi on the pasuk mentions, Marsha brings it over here, that this is the only place in all of Tanakh where the word zonus is written mole with both vavs. Usually it's written with the first instead of the first vav. There's just a cholam zun zayin nun vav sof. Here it's spelt out in full. So therefore we darshin at maloshin zunar. Another point is also that the Rif points out if it meant literally zonus, then it wouldn't just be zonus in the plural, one zona as well. A person can lose a fortune based on that. So therefore the Gemara darshins it different. Anyway, so it means a person says this teaching in Torah is nice and this one is not nice. Ma'abed honeshal Torah. By doing that, he loses the treasure of Torah. So it's not good to say that. Because in other words, even now Maosha says that would even be a problem. Just saying Shmur Zuna is already a problem, because by saying this one is nice, you're implying there are other ones that are not so nice. However, there are achronim that Ashash points out that we do find in places in the Gemara where somebody says on a teaching in Gemara Kama Malya Hoshmaitza. So we see that maybe that is okay to say, and we have, you know, people always talk about a nice vort or a good vort or whatever. And he says in particular, anyway, maybe we're talking about primarily here, we're talking about where you're just praising it without actually taking a stand on whether you agree with it as a matter of halacha. Tosfos, in fact, discusses the question, does Reb Nachman necessarily actually disagree with this as a matter of halacha, or does he agree with it as he himself says something on the sugya later on, and maybe he's just pointing out that you can't say it as a blanket statement for everybody. So that kind of thing, maybe you shouldn't criticize, but if you're going to disagree with it, then you have every right to criticize it, says the Rashash, and you do find examples of that in Shas. Anyway, the point is, we're darshaning zonus maloshon zuno. And Marsha says, you can actually, because you take the first, the Zion and the Vav. Again, this is the only place in Tanakh where the word Zonus is written with the first Vav. So the first Zion and Vav gives you the word Zu. And the next, the Nun and the Vav, is the same gematria as the word Na'er. And the Tuf means to be Marbe, that a person does this, that he says Zu Na'er or Zu Eininah. Omalei, so Rav Nachman says, you're right, Hadri B, I changed my mind. I take it back. I won't do it anymore. Or Yon Yaakov explains that it can also mean that Rav Nachman is saying like this, I would have just disagreed with it on the basis of my own svara, that I'm saying it's not logical, it doesn't seem to fit everybody, but now I won't do that anymore in the future. If I'm going to argue with something that Shmuel said, I'll do it only based on a solid proof. Okay, so more on this topic. Amar Rava Bar Rav Huna, Shosui Al Yispalel, a person who's drunk some wine, and we're going to define soon what that means. Al Yispalel, he shouldn't daven until the wine dissipates. Ve'im Yispalel, but if he did, Tfilase Tfilah, then his Tfilah B'dievet is a valid Tfilah. Shikur Al Yispalel, on the other hand, if he's really drunk, then he shouldn't daven. Ve'im Yispalel Tfilase Te'eva, then if he davens under those conditions, then his Tfilah is considered a disgusting thing to Hashem. So heifi dami shosu heifi dami shikur. How do we tell the difference? Ki ha the rabba or the rab abba bar shumni, rab manasha bar yumi yumi gifti. Usually in chas, he's rab yumi yumi difti. So here it might be. So on the side over here, it says it should tackle be difti. Anyway, havo komifturi mehadodi. These two chachamim were one time taking leave of one another. Amabra de nahar yupsi. By the bridge or by the ferry over the river Yupsi. So each one is going to, they're taking leave from one another, and they're going to each go their separate directions. Amri, so they said, name a milsa kochad b'chad minan g'lo shmir le'lachabri. Each of us, before we leave, should say something in Torah that the other one has never heard of before. Da'amar amari, b'reder av huna, b'reder av yemiya, lo yipote od mechabera, elamater dvar halacha. A person should take leave of somebody else only with a dvar halacha, shemetoch kach zoichrei, that way he will remember him. In other words, the parshat pshat, it means like this. In other words, the next time, every time you think of that halacha, you'll also think of your fellow yid who you took leave from. Marshon brachas, where this gemara also says it also means just the opposite. It means you'll remember the halacha better. Whenever you remember your friend, then automatically it'll have a mental association with that halacha. And Hayom Yom, you have the vort from one of the Rebbeim that says that it's also on a deeper level. A dvar halacha is a dover that makes the person a mahalach. That in other words, you tell him something, you tell him something to encourage him and strengthen him in his avoda, that he shouldn't just be an oimed, he shouldn't just be standing still, but he should be a mahalach, he should be continuing to walk and to grow in avoda. Anyway, so they're saying each of us should say a halacha that the other one never heard of before. So one of them started and said, "Heichi dami shosi v'heichi dami shikur." We just said that Rabbi Bar Rav Huna said a shosui b'diavad can daven, but a shikur cannot. So what's the difference? Shosui is kol shiyochel adabu v'fnei melech. The definition of shosui is he drank a little bit, but he's still able to speak coherently in front of a king. Shikur, kol she'eni yochel adabu v'fnei melech. The definition of shikur would be he's so muddled that he can't speak clearly in front of the king. So then we're saying a person davens under those conditions, tfilos ha-te'ev. Then you have, by the way, in halacha, you have a stage even beyond that called shichrus ha-shaloit, where the person doesn't know at all what's going on. Then for sure, he can't daven, and then he's b'chal potter from kol mitzvah samudas v'terda, because temporarily he's a shoiter. So here we're talking about the shikr. He understands what's going around him, but he can't speak coherently. Therefore, he shouldn't be davening under those conditions until he sobers up. So that was one. Pasach idach v'amar. Then the other one started saying, "Here's a halacha that you haven't heard before." Hamachzik b'nichse ager. Suppose somebody makes a chazaka on property of a ger. Now you have a ger. If a ger passes away without having any children. So if it was a born yid, there would always be yoshin. He doesn't have children. Then we have the whole parshas Nachlos and parshas Pinchas. It goes, if he doesn't have any children, then it goes to his father. If he doesn't have, his father has passed away, it goes to his brothers, and it goes up the line to his father's father, then to his uncles, et cetera, all the way back to the progenitor of his shevet, if necessary. But with a ger, you don't have that. Gershin is a guy with a cotton or the dummy, so he's not considered related to his original birth family anymore. So if he has children, then they'll yarshin him, but if not, then there's nobody to yarshin him. Therefore, his property is free for the taking. Any Yisrael, any yid can take it. And we find, in fact, there's Gemara in Bava Basra that mentions that that's how Rav got a building for his Beis Medrash. He needed a building. There was a ger in his neighborhood who passed away. Rav was able to get there first and make a chazakah on the building. And there you go. He has a building for his yeshiva. Anyway, but the point is, so like this, machzik v'nichsa ager is a tremendous windfall. So ketzad yasevi kaimenu biyadei. What should he do in order to make sure that it'll be preserved? In other words, this is the kind of thing, it's a windfall, it's like winning the lottery. He got it without putting in any effort. So therefore, people are going to wonder about it, and like there's going to be sort of an ayin hara on it. And unless he does some kind of mitzvah with it, then it's not going to stay by him. He's going to end up losing it somehow or other, or he's going to end up having to spend other expenses that more than make up for it. So what should he do? Yikach behen sefer Torah, he should use some of the money that he inherited from this nichse ager and use it to buy a sefer Torah. And the schus of that will help preserve the rest of it. Rav Sheshes says this applies not only to a person who inherited the property of a ger, which is a tremendous windfall, but even a husband who has nichse ishtoi, so his wife brings in nichse malug into the marriage, where now the husband has control of them. Also, it's the kind of thing that people are going to find unusual. He got such a windfall, and there'll be an ayin hara, and therefore, Rav Sheshes says there also he should be using some of the money towards a sefer Torah. Marsha explains each one is like a chidush over the previous one. The machzik v'nichse ager, he has everything. He has the entire keren. So even the Baal B'nichse Ishtoi, the Keren in principle doesn't belong to him. It belongs to the wife. And eventually, when the marriage is over, it'll go back to her. Only the Peiris of it belong to the husband. Nevertheless, still, it's something unusual. And therefore, you should be grateful to Hashem and give some of it away to Hashem for Sefer Torah. Rava says, not only that, but even a person did business and he was successful and he made a nice profit, then also he shouldn't think, in other words, that he shouldn't think, well, it was my effort. Let him show gratitude to Hashem and put some of it towards making a sefer Torah, towards buying a sefer Torah. Rav Papa says, even if he found a lost object under conditions where he's able to keep them, where also a person might be apt to say, well, it so happens. So you walk along, sometimes you find something, sometimes you find the treasure. Nevertheless, he should do that. He shouldn't think that it's coincidence. He should realize it's hashgacha pratis and give Hashem his portion. Rav Nachman Yitzchok Amar, afilo kosav tefillin. Rav Nachman Yitzchok says, even if he wrote tefillin. Now some mafoshim explain, and then Marsha points out that the old girsa, the girsa in old gemaras was afilo koisev tefillin, and then later printers changed it to afilo kosav tefillin. So afilo koisev tefillin would mean even if a person is writing tefillin and makes some profit from it, also he should set some of the money aside towards a sefer Torah. In other words, the point is, Marsha says, even though the Gemara tells us elsewhere that the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah specifically daven to Hashem, that Sofrim should not make much of a profit off tefillin. So therefore, he's not making much of a profit as it is. He's likely to think then, at least whatever I did make come from my own efforts. Nevertheless, he should show gratitude to Hashem and give some of it to Hashem. The girsa that we have, afilo kosav tefillin, would mean, Rav Nachman Yitzchok says, it's not necessary for the person in all these cases to actually set money aside for a sefer Torah, even if he just sets aside money for a pair of tefillin. So even though tefillin is not, it's not used by the rabbim like a sefer Torah, it's not as expensive, nevertheless, that's also something he's giving Hashem his portion, and therefore that will also help that this windfall or whatever it is will be preserved by him. So Amar Rav Chanan, V'itamer Rav Chanina, Maikra, where is a pasuk that we see this point, that when a person has, that a person got something unexpected, that he should give some of it to Hashem and do a mitzvah with it. Dichtiv, V'yidah Yisrael Neder, L'Hashem V'yoymar, as you find, when Melech Arod, which is really Amalek in disguise, came and attacked the Jewish people in Parshas Chukas, and again, it's mentioned in Parshas Matas Masei, and over there it says, V'yidah Yisrael Neder, the Jewish people made a neder and said, if you help me defeat them, then Bachramti Yasarehem, I will make their property, as Rashi says, Akdish Shlalom LaGavoya, I'll make it hektish to the Mishkan. And sure enough, they did beat them. So therefore, we see from that that when a person gets a windfall like that, they should give it to Hashem. They should give some of it at least to Hashem. Now, Maharsha says, I mean, we have an earlier example. We have Yaakov Avinu in Parshas Vayetze, Vayida Yaakov Neder Lemer, Im Yelikim Imadi, etc. So Maharsha explains like this. With Yaakov, Yaakov was very poor because we know Eliphaz took everything that he had. So what is he asking for Hashem? Just lechem lechem lechel veged lumish. So there's no way that Yaakov is going to think once he gets the lechem lechel veged lumish, no way that he's going to think, you know what, this was koichi va'otzim yadi. So therefore, we're not going to learn from that so much. Because after all, he's one person. How much can one person accomplish? But here you have the whole Jewish people are fighting against the king of Arad. So it's more b'derech hateva that they're going to win. Nevertheless, they recognize that they need Hashem to help them, and they're saying, and therefore, v'yida Yisrael neder, so therefore we learn from that, that even when you have something that seems to be very much b'derech hateva, nevertheless, realize that it's not. The Eibishter is the one who gave it to you, and therefore you should be giving some of it to Hashem. So particularly the Torah, where you have Keren Kayemes Le Peresea Ba'olam Hazeh Keren Kayemes Le'olam, is the appropriate thing to get, which is why we're saying in each of these cases, you should get a Sefer Torah. And again, according to Maharsha's understanding, we're saying Davka Sefer Torah, not Tefillin, the last one that Rav Nachman Yitzchok says, even if a person wrote a pair of Tefillin and made a little profit on it, he should designate some of that profit towards a mitzvah, towards eventually using it to get a Sefer Torah. Whereas according to the Girsa that we have it in front of us over here, is even if a person doesn't buy a Sefer Torah with it, he just writes a pair of tefillin, he just uses the money to buy a pair of tefillin, that also helps to preserve the rest of it. Okay. On to Yecheskel. So we started talking yesterday about the toyim around the Heifel. So there we have two different diagrams of what the... Here we have two different diagrams of what the layout, what the basic floor plan of the Heichal was. Yesterday, we talked about how the Pasuk is describing that the wall was inset. So here's a picture to illustrate that. So you have on one side, you have the wall is the same thickness, the whole height. The other side, which is the side towards the Heichal, it's indented as you go further up. So that each ta is wider than the previous one. And then, as we're going to learn now in Pasuk Zion, you have also in the middle over there, you have a spiral staircase going from the bottom floor. That's how you get to the middle floor. And the top floor is by a spiral staircase that runs the height of the toyim. So each set of toyim here you have, there's five toyim on each side and one in the back. And then again, you have a second and a third floor on top of that. So within each ta, there's a spiral staircase that goes to the next one above it and so forth. So Pasuk Perek Mem Aleph Pasuk Zayin, if people haven't taken Hilchos Beis HaBechira, then take one. Pasuk Zayin, the Rochava, so it got wider and wider. Again, the toyim are getting wider as you go up. The Nosva, and it turned Lamala Lamala, going higher and higher, meaning that there's the spiral staircase, Latzlois, to the toyim. Ki Musava Bias Lamaila Lamaila Soviv Sovila Bias, because there was like that. You had going round and round the house, meaning going round and round the top to go higher and higher all around the house, all around the Heichel. You have the spiral staircase. And also Rashi adds, besides the spiral staircase to go from one top to the next one above it, in addition, you also have a staircase that leads up eventually all the way to the roof of the you have a staircase that goes all the way to the roof of the toyim, so you can walk on top of them. Later on, we'll also talk about in the second Beis Hamikdash, and according to one explanation in Rashi, he learned that this is how they'll be in the third Beis Hamikdash as well. There's also a staircase that wraps around the Heichel that allows you to go to the second floor and eventually to the roof of the Heichel, that is. So he continues, Alken Ruichab Labayas Lamaila. Therefore, the house, meaning the area of the toyim, gets wider and wider as you go further up, because again, the wall is indented, the wall is indented as you're going further and further up. Again, rather than having the wall being the same thickness and the ends of the beams being going into holes in the wall, as we talked about yesterday, they didn't do that. They didn't do that in the first and second Beis Hamikdash as well. All three of them, you have the same kind of arrangement with it being indented like that. And he continues at the end of Pasuk Zayin, B'chein HaTachtoina, the same way, when you're coming from the bottom ta, Yala Al HaYona, you can go up to the top one, Latichoina, by going through the middle one. So because you have that spiral staircase, so therefore the way you get to the top one is by walking up the stairs, and then if you want to go all the way to the top, you go all the way to the top, and otherwise you get off at whatever floor you want. Pasuk Ches, V'ro'isi Labayis Goivach Soviv Soviv. I saw that the house had a height all around. Now, this means here we don't mean the toim. The toim themselves are each only 5 amas tall. The whole height of the toim section is only 15 amas. We mean here the heichal itself, the middle over there where you have the Kurdish and the Kurdish and Kadoshim is very tall. Now, it doesn't say in the pasuk how tall. The second Bais Mikdash, it says in the Masechta Midas that it was 100 amas. So Rashi learns this is how it'll be here as well. The Malbim has an interesting explanation about it, which also ties in, he says, with the part about it, about the wall getting further and further indented. He learns actually that the wall is indented as you go further up, not because the toyim are wider and wider, but because he says, because you have, he learns the heichal of the third Bais Mikdash is going to be much, much taller than it was in any of the 2 previous Batei Mikdash. The first Bais Mikdash, the Pasuk says, it was 120 amas. The second one, where the total was 100. The third one, he says, will be much, much taller. Now, you have, again, Masechta Midas, it describes how you have the staircase that wraps around the heichal. You go from the north side, then around the west, and then up to the south side, and that gets you to the second floor. And then from there, you have ladders to go up to the top. Here, he says, the idea is you're going to have like a staircase that wraps round and round and round the heichal several times, and therefore it gets indented more and more as you go further up, because you have to have a way of getting all the way to the top, where it'll be hundreds of amas tall. Continues Pasuk Ches, Mustois Hatzlois, Maloi Hakone, the bases, the foundations of the Tzlois, of the Toyim are a full Kone, which is, we learned at the beginning of Perek Mem that a Kone is 6 Amos, Sheish, and he defines it again, Sheish Amos Atzila, 6 Amos Atzila. So Atzila, Rashi translates based on Targum Yonasan as space. Meaning, in other words, there were 6 amos underground where there were the foundations. Above ground, it narrowed to 5 amos. So when we calculate the width of the heichal, we're going to calculate, there's going to be 2 different possible ways of calculating it. One by considering the thickness of the foundation of 6 amos, and the other by considering the thickness of the above ground wall, which is 5 amos. So he continues, Pasuk test, Roichabakir Ashela Tsela Elachutz Chomish Amos, the thickness of the wall of the Tzlois, of the Toyim, that faces towards the outside, away from the Heichel, is 5 Amos thick. Rashi points out in the Masechta Midas, you have with the second Bais Mikdash, it was the same thing. The Asher Munach, and there's also a space. Munach means Targum Yonason rather translates it, Vasar Shvik. Of space that was left based tzlois, asher laboyis, in the area of the tzlois, in the area of the toyim of the house, of the heichal. So here you have the 2 explanations in Rashi, which are reflected in the 2 diagrams over here of what this munach is. The top diagram is the first explanation in Rashi. So what you have is you have like this. We're going to explain in the next couple of psukim the total length of the heichal from the front of the ulam until the back is 100 amos. The total width of the base of chalifos, the wings that stick out over there, is 10 amos. So the rest of it is 90. So one way of understanding it is the munach is a space of 5 amos between the base of chalifos and the rest of the heichal. So therefore, you have 10 amos for base of chalifos, 5 for this munach, and then 85 for the rest for the heichal with its toyim. So according to that, we learned yesterday, it actually calculates that each of the toyim are 12 amos long, and then the walls between one and the next are 5 amos, so therefore that gives you 85. So that's one way of understanding it. The second way Rashi gives is that the munach is between the toyim and the heichal. So that's the bottom diagram. There you have that the total length of the area of the toyim is 90 amos, then according to that, which means that each of the toyim is a bit longer than it would have been otherwise. But instead, what you have is a 5 amos space between the wall of the heichal and the wall of the toyim. And the same thing on the other side. Now, in the top diagram, you have spaces on the other side of the toyim away from the heichal. Those are, so you have, Rashi had a Talmud named Rabbeinu Shmaya. This Rabbeinu Shmaya was Rashi's secretary, for one thing, when Rashi was not feeling well and wasn't able to write, then Rabbeinu Shmaya would write for him. But also, Rabbeinu Shmaya wrote a Pirush on Masechta Midas to explain the blueprint of the second Bais Mikdash, and there he brings in a lot of explanations from Rashi that are relevant to these Pesukim as well. So he explains over there in the Mishnayos and Midas, it describes how you have, besides the Toyim, you also have on one side the space outside of the Toyim, on the north side, towards the right side of the diagram, is is a staircase, that staircase that we were talking about before, where that's the beginning of that staircase, which wraps around the Heichel to allow you to go up to the second floor. And then the other one, the space on the other side, on the south side, corresponding to that, is called Beis Herodas Hamayim. That was where water would drain off the roof of the Heichel through down that. It was a slope downward, and that was where the water would drain off the roof. So Rabbeinu Shmaya explains in his Pirush on Midas that Rashi learns that in the third Beis Mikdash you're going to have the same thing, and therefore those are those spaces over there. But again, that's according to the first Pirush. According to the second Pirush and Rashi, there may not be space for those, because once you count, Rashi is going to give us soon in Pasuk Yud Beis the calculation of the width of the Heichel. It doesn't seem, according to that there's any room for those, unless Rashi would say in the second Pirush that's what the Munach is used for. Maybe one side, the Munach is the staircase, and the other side is the Beis Harodas Hamayim, and it's not just Stam an empty space. But the Rashi doesn't say so explicitly one way or the other. Anyway, Pasuk Yud, now between the chambers. So till now we've been talking about the Heichel. Now there is also, we're going to learn in Perek Mem Beis that next to the Heichel on either side there are large chambers, big gigantic chambers, 50 by 100 amos, which are the Psukim explain they're meant as an extension of the Ezras Kohanim. The whole Ezras Anoshim in the second Beis Hamikdash is 100 by 100 amos, which is a good deal smaller than it was in the second Beis HaMikdash, where it was 187 by 135. So fine, okay, you had there, the Heichel was inside it, here the Heichel is not inside it, but still, there may not be very much floor space in there. So therefore, he describes in Perek Mem Beis, there are going to be these giant l'shochos on either side of the Heichel, which are meant as an extension of that. The Kohenim can eat Kodshe Kodshim in there, even though Kodshe Kodshim are only B'soich HaKlob, L'fnim HaKloyim. These areas are going to be considered L'fnim HaKloyim. So we'll learn about them in more detail in Perek Mem Beis. But anyway, so now he's mentioning, by the way, Uvein HaLashochas, Reuchav Esrim Amma, Sobib Labayis, Sobib Sobib, between the Heichel and each of those Lashochas, there are 20 Ammas. Meaning, exactly that. So you have the Heichel. So you have the northern and southern walls of the Heichel. From there until the wall of those respective Lashochas on the north and on the south is 20 Amos. Now, since you have in the front of the Heichel, the base of Halifa sticks out 15 Amos in each direction. So over there, at that point, you only have 5 Amos space. Later on, we're going to learn in Perek Mem Beis, what you actually have is like this. To go from the Azara, given that the Azara is over here, and this wall over here blocks off the whole west side of it. So what you have is you have a 1 amma space over here that you walk from the Azara through that, then you have this area of 5 ammas, and then you come out into this area of 20 ammas, and then you go into the door of that Lishka, and you eat the Kodsha, and you cook and eat the Kodsha. Actually, Yechezkel explains later, in Perek Mem Vav, you have an area over here and over here where they would cook the Kodsha, and then in the Lishka, which is over here is where they would eat. So this space over here is 20 ammas, and you would get to it by through that 1 amma and then 5 amma space next to the base of Halifas. Continues, prosecute Aleph, Ufesach HaTzela LaMunach. The entrance of the Tzela, of the Toyim, is to the Munach. So again, according to their first explanation that the Munach is below the Toyim, east of them, then it means that that's, you have in the diagram of there, you have that that sort of diagonal entrance from the Toyim to go into the Munach. According to the second explanation, then you would have the bottom Ta has an entrance out to the Munach on either side. Pesach Echad Derech HaTzofen or Pesach Echad Adorim. There's one such opening on the north and one on the south. And the width of the Munach is 5 amas all around, meaning to the north and the south, either again, both between the Beis HaChalifos and the Toyim, according to the top diagram, or between the Toyim and the Heichel, according to the bottom diagram. Either way, it's 5 amas wide. Now, we haven't mentioned over here, if you notice in the diagram over here, the Ta on the bottom in the top diagram, and then in the bottom diagram, you just have, either way, you have a sort of circuitous route to get into the Heichel. Have over here. This thing is called, this kind of little door over here is called a pishposh. So you have here or here respectively. The idea is in the Shnayas Midas, it describes the doors of the Heichel, which we'll talk about the doors towards the end of the Perek. The doors of the Heichel were locked at night, and then someone had one of the Kohanim had to come and open and unlock them in the morning.
how is he getting into the Heichal to unlock them? So he would go through this Pishbosh over here. He'd go into the Tah, and then from there, there'd be an entrance into the Heichal, and then he'd unlock the door. There's a Mishnah over there, and the Huda says a little differently. They'd come in between two sets of doors and open one from one direction and the other.
Was inside.
What?
They locked it from inside.
So they locked it from the inside, right. So therefore, we have to go through this pishbush over here and go in. And then Mishnah's Talmud, it also describes there was like an area over there where he had to stick his hand all the way in through a hole in the wall in order to reach the lock. So they had that system set up. So here, if you have the Toyim are right next to the Heichal, then you have that kind of arrangement. Toyim are not next to the Heichal. There's no reason to go out into the Tah and then back through. So then the Pashto said the pishbush would just go like this. Thickness of the wall, and you come out into the Heichal and unlock the doors like that.
Yechezkel doesn't really describe the pishbush in so many words, but later on in Perek Mem Dalet, he says he was shown a certain gate which was locked, and then the Malach tells him because the Shechina came into the Bais Mikdash through that, so therefore it remains permanently locked. That's the equivalent one on the south side. So that's why on the south side, you won't see any pishbush over there, only on the north side, because the one on the south is closed. The Mishnayos and Midas described that they had the same thing in the second Bais HaMikdash, that it was that one was closed permanently. Only the one on the north was available, and that was what the Kohen would walk through to unlock the doors of the Heichal in the morning.
There's a point about being locked if you just go through the pishbush.
That's just the idea. Well, the idea is just out of respect for the Bais HaMikdash, like it shouldn't just be open all the time. They had Kohanim and Levium on guard all the time anyway. But it could be maybe somebody might think to actually just walk directly in. But the Pishbosh also, as it describes over there in Mishnayos and Tumen and Midas, it wasn't that easy to open that either. The Kohanim needed to reach all the way through a hole in the wall to unlock it from the inside. So it wasn't like anybody could just stand walking. Pasuk Yud Beis, v'habinyon asher al pnei gizra pas derech hayom. Now let's talk about the building of the Heichal, which is in front of the gizra. So Rashi explains that the binyan means the whole building, including the Heichal itself plus the Tayim, and gizra means more like a fortress. So Rashi explains the gizra would refer to the Heichal proper, which is, as we said before, according to Rashi, 100 amas tall, and then the binyan would refer to the whole structure surrounding it with the Tayim. So pa'as derech hayom, on the west side, roichav shivim amas. It is 70 amos wide. So at the back of the Heichal, you have the Mishnayos and Midas mentioned that the Heichal was wider in front, and the second Bais HaMikdash was wider in front, narrower in the back, and it looked like a lion, as the Pasuk says, Hoy Ariel Ariel Kiras Chon David. So in the third Bais HaMikdash, it's going to be the same kind of thing, where it's wide in front and narrow in the back. So here, in the back, on the west side, it's 70 amos wide. How do we get 70 amas? So Rashi makes the calculation over here according to the second explanation, according to the second diagram, with the munach being between the toyim and the heifel. So he calculates like this. You have you have 5 amas of wall on the outside. The toy itself is 4 amas wide. Then 5 amas of wall on the other side of it. So far, you've got 14 then. Now, we said before that the foundation of the wall is 6 amas wide, but here Rashi is not taking that into consideration. He's just he's considering just the wall as it is above ground. So you have so far 5, 4, and 5 gives you 14. Then you have the munach as another 5 amas gives you 19. Then you have the 6 amas thick, the wall of the Heichal. So that gets you to 25. The Heichal itself is 20 amas, the Kodesh, and the Kodesh HaKadoshim is 20 amas wide, gives you 45. Another 6 amas of wall is 51. And then you have the five, four and five from the other side, the Munach wall, Tar wall. There are your 19, there's your 7. According to the first diagram, then Rabbeinu Shmaya explains, based on what he learned from Rashi, that the calculation would be somewhat different. You'd have, in particular, the wall, the outer wall counts as 6, because the base of it is 6, and the Mesiba and the base Herodes Amayim, the two spaces you have over there, are each 3 amos wide, and there, and you come up with a similar calculation, and you also come up with 70 amos. So therefore, it's 70 amas. The kira binyan chomish amas roichav saviv saviv. Then he continues, the wall of the building, meaning the walls of the toyim, are 5 amas thick all around. Like we said before, it's 6 amas below ground and 5 amas above ground. V'okei tishim amah, the length of that entire area, including the toyim and all, but excluding the Beis HaKhalifos, is 90 amas. And that's according to both, either diagram, according to the one you have, the toyim run all the way until the beginning of the Beis HaKhalifos, and that's 90, that's the bottom diagram. And according to the top one, you have 85 of that, plus 5 amas of Munach also gives you 90. Then he continues, Pasuk Yud Gimel, U'madar sabayis orach mea amah. Then he measured the length of the house, of the entire building, is 100 amas long. That's including the Beis HaKhalifos, because you have the Beis HaKhalifos is 10 amas wide. You had a similar kind of thing in the set. It was arranged similarly in the second Beis HaMikdash. And he continues, Vagizra, Rabinya, Vakirosel, Odach Mea Amma, altogether the Gizra, which is the fortress, the central part of the Heichel, and the Binya, which is the buildings all around it, the Toyim, which are much lower, Vakirosel, plus all the walls, is Odach, the whole thing, including the Beis HaKhalifos, Odach Mea Amma, the whole thing is 100 amas long, from east to west, that is. Pasuk Yadalad, Verocha, Pnea Bais, Vagizra, Lakodim, Mea Amma. Then the width of the front of the house, of the Heichel and the Gizra, on the east side is 100 amah. The front of it faces towards the east. You have the Ezras Anoshim is below it on the diagram, or the east of it. So the front wall of the Heichel is 100 amahs long, and therefore it would close up that whole side, except for that 1 amah space that I mentioned before that we'll talk about in a little more detail in Perek Mem Beis. So here you have the front of it is 100 amahs wide, and the back is 70 amahs wide. Again, the way we have it described, the way we have it diagrammed over here, is according to Rashi, who learns that it was shaped like a T with those 2 wings sticking out. I mentioned yesterday that Rambam learns by the second Beis HaMikdash that it was shaped like a trapezoid, and it went smoothly from 100 back to 70, sloping in on both sides. Whether he would say the same thing about the third Beis HaMikdash, I don't know. And then he summarizes a modat urchabin of Pnea Gizra. Then he measured the length of the building in front of the Gizra, in front of the fortress, meaning the main Beis HaMikdash building, Asher al Achareha, which is behind it, which includes also Rashi explains Asher al Achareha. Now he's measuring backwards. Before he was measuring towards the east, now he's measuring towards the west, but to make sure to show that it's the same size all around. The Atikeha. And the Atikeha, the Targum Yonason translates Zovius, the corners, meaning those corners that stick out on the both sides in front, the sides of the Beis HaKhalifos. Mipoyim Mipoyim, including that on both sides, Mea Amah is 100 Amah. Then he continues, V'Heichel HaPnimi, V'Ulamei HaChotzer. Then there's something as far as the inner Heichel and the Ulamei and the hallways of the Chotzer, but that's actually going to go with the next Pasuk. So we'll talk about tomorrow what he's going to describe, as Hashem, what he's going to talk about with that, what there is in the Heichel. And in those hallways, there's something that they all have in common as far as detail of their construction that he's going to talk about the next couple of Pasukim. Yem Yem Mashiach Ogola, Chavches Tammuz. The Zohar says that the first Beis HaMikdash and the second Beis HaMikdash were binyana de barnash, they were built by human beings, and therefore it has no key. But the third Beis HaMikdash is binyana de kudsha bricho, it's built by Hashem, and it'll be kaim lad. We talked about a few days ago an excerpt from a sicha where the Rebbe talks about the details of what we mean. On the other hand, we have the Mashiach Bonim Koimer, there's the various ways of reconciling that. So now, as far as the 3 Bate Mikdash, the first one corresponds to Avram, the second one to Yitzchak, and the third one to Yaakov. Yaakov's Mideh is Emes, and Emes means that it never stops. There's never any change in it. Therefore, the Bais Shlishi will last forever. Continuing on Halachas of Tfilas HaDerech, we're talking about the halachas of Tfilas HaDerech. So now, more generally, here's some other halachas that are relevant as far as travel. Before a person goes on a trip, he should give tzedakah. Tzedek walks before him, the yosim, the derech b'amav, and then he sets his steps to start going. Also, a person should go and ask for a bracha from the dolem shabair, that they should give him a bracha that he should be successful on his way. Nowadays, I guess the equivalent would be going to the oil before that. And also, a person should try to make an effort that people should accompany him. I mean, there's the importance of Lavoya, of somebody, of accompanying a person when he's going from one place to another. So when you're leaving, you should stay in one place. This is Rabbi Yaakov Emden brings that you should stay there until you can't see the guy anymore. Also, when you're saying goodbye to somebody, you don't say Leich Bishalom, you say Leich Lishalom. Because we find David says to Avshalom, Leich Bishalom, and what happened? He ended up getting hung up on a tree and killed. Yisrei told Moshe, Leich Lishalom, and Olav Yitzliach. There's different explanations of why that is, what the nuance is. One meaning is when we say bishalom, you're saying go with the shalom you already have. You're not having any more after this, as opposed to leich l'shalom implies you still have more shalom that you're going to achieve. In fact, the Gemara says over there, when you're niftim and ames, then you do say leich bishalom, because if you want to say that he has all the shalom that he should already have achieved. Anyway, another din, when a person is traveling, you should be oisik b'toyr, or the left of chavaderech. Now, the Alter Rebbe adds the detail. He shouldn't be involved in iyun halacha, in delving into something really deep in halacha, because he may lose his way, unless somebody else is driving, and then you can do that. You say every day you should say some tilim, b'kavana, and make sure you have some food with you, take along some extra tzitzis in case you might not have. And another point, a person should always, person should go to where he's lodging while the sun is still shining and leave only the next day after the sun comes up. And then and one last halacha in the sif, a person should not eat that much on the road, should not eat as much as he normally would when he's traveling on the road.